Station number 26359.
Colonel Robbins, reel 10. So Arnhem is in the offing. How long before the actual event do you think you were aware of what was going to happen?
We were told the details almost the day before the airborne landing started. We were not told while we were in France. All we knew was that we then had our long drive up ourselves a couple of days. And as we got closer and closer to Holland, so we knew more about it. I forget exactly when we were told, but I think it wasn't until we were in Holland a couple of days before, and I think, I forget the date, maybe the 17th of September.
And you saw gliders and planes, did you?
And we were lying down on the main road up to Grave, and then Nijmegen and so on. And we were told there was to be this tremendous airborne assault of two American and one British division. And I think on the 17th, I was just trying to look it up. 17th of September, we saw these planes coming over. Gliders and aeroplanes. And it was very heartwarming to see the sky filled with these aircraft. And they were on the way, the ones we saw were on the way to Arnhem. We didn't see the airborne assault on the other bridges. Grave and Nijmegen.
What did you hear about it as the assault went on? Did you start hearing that there were about difficulties and
As always in war and battles, rumours float. And we were not given any specific orders as such. And there wasn't an O group, except I think the day before the landing at Arnhem, where we were told as soon as they've landed, and as soon as those Americans and the Guards Armoured have cleared Nijmegen, the 43rd Division is going to go through. Straight to Arnhem, relieve the 1st Airborne Division, and on we go to Germany. Those are the orders we had. And then we started off. Now, on that long drive up, of course, it was only one road, and the Germans were on either side of that road and frequently cut it. So we were often marooned, parties of us. On one occasion, General Horrocks, the corps commander, was cut off with us on the way up. You could easily have gone off that road. There were no signposts. It was dark when we were driving.
Did you talk to General Horrocks?
I never talked to
No.
General Horrocks, never. He talked to us on occasion.
Did you have an opinion of him as a commander?
There was an opinion of him which preceded him because of his good name in the desert fighting, and we were terribly glad that he was the corps commander. He showed himself a great deal to the troops in the front line, and he always had a good word for anyone he happened to see. He also liked addressing us. I remember on one occasion he addressed us after the Battle of Mont Pinçon, when we had been promised 3 or 4 days' rest. And we were formed up in a field, and he drove in his jeep, stood up, we were all lined up, three sides of a square. I think he asked us to close in a bit. And he said how pleased he was. He said no one could have conducted that battle as well as the 43rd Division. And I am so particularly glad of you here today, the Wiltshires and the Somersets, who achieved so much. In fact, I'm so pleased with you, I'm putting you back into action tomorrow. And then he drove off, and we didn't realise until after he'd gone what this damn wretched man had said. We expected 4 days' leave, we were going back into action tomorrow. Why? Because he thought we were so good. Well, all right, we were in a hurry. That was before Falaise. But anyway, when you ask about Horrocks, that's one memory I have of him. And also saw him once or twice on the route. But I personally never spoke to him. When we got to Nijmegen, eventually, the guards armoured were already there, and they were having quite a job clearing the town. We didn't realise this. We thought it was the Americans, and they had done it. We got to the Nijmegen Bridge. There were two bridges, one railway, one road. The road bridge was our objective. And when we got to it, there was quite a lot of fighting around there. And the Germans, I remember seeing tied up in the girders right up above, but they'd been shot and they were hanging dead.
Was there another regiment there engaging the Germans when you got there?
I only remember the guards armoured there, and there were certainly some Americans on the right who later did a very good assault by boat because we were held up on this bridge. They got across and they had a lot of casualties. Anyway, they got the other side of the bridge, and with the guards armoured and themselves, the bridge was taken. I think the Germans had tried to blow it up, but something went wrong with the dynamite. So we eventually crossed the bridge.
Were you under fire? Or?
Not when we crossed the bridge. Uh-huh. The Germans had been withdrew from that area up the main road towards Arnhem. And that is the main road they were determined to hold. I think it was the Irish Guards who got across. Maybe the Grenadiers. And we crossed the bridge. And my CO was talking to the Irish Guards CO. And he said, why do you not press on? And he said, this is on a road which is raised above the fields and dikes. It's like shooting easy targets. We'll have a go. He said, we've had a go. And already four of our tanks have been shot off that road and are lying in the ditches, burnt out. In that case, the general said, the infantry will go on. And that is when we had this terrible hard battle to get from Nijmegen to Arnhem. I remember my company was ordered to go left of this road, not on the road, and in the dikes. The dikes were mostly full of water, which meant we were walking waist-deep in water quite often. If you popped your head over, you were likely to get a shot, machine guns. The Germans were holding the orchards, and they certainly had tanks astride the road. The tanks couldn't get up, and the only way we could do it was by going through the dikes. Often at a cross dike there'd be a German machine gun. You had to eliminate it. And all I'm trying to say is the going was very, very slow. Colonel Luce kept saying, "You've got to press on because the airborne have already been 3 days in Arnhem. They should have been out yesterday. We've got to go and get them out." And so we continued trying, but we kept losing men. It was a very difficult business. We went into houses. They were often booby-trapped. The Dutch had been kicked out or treated. They were treated the Dutch very badly. But it was a very, very slow business. And it was 9 days before we eventually got a battalion. It was the Dorsets. I remember the CO was a very great friend of mine, and he went across the river at night. I never saw him again, nor any of those Dorsets. We got out, I think, about 2,000, but 10,000 were killed or taken prisoner.
What did you see of that rescue yourself?
It was at night. I was about a mile back from that battalion. I didn't see anything of that. All I saw was what airborne came back through us.
Yes. Did you get a sense of people being dispirited now that, you know, the great airborne landing had gone turned south?
Well, the airborne was certainly dispirited. What took you so long? One of them, I remember saying to one of us, we've been waiting 9 bloody days for you. I remember one soldier said, we've taken 9 months to come up to get you from Normandy. It wasn't a nice business. On that fight we had to get to the bridge, my battalion got fairly near, could see the bridge, and at one point the only a railway line separated the Germans from myself. That's about two rail tracks and a bit, maybe 30 yards. Anyway, they were in a ditch on one side, we were in a ditch on the other. A farm track led up to this level crossing. We could hear them at night. Sometimes they would push us back, and sometimes we'd push them back. The CO said, we've got to clear those Germans from there, and we've got to push on. One night, after we had pushed the Germans back over the level crossing, at about 2 or 3 in the morning, one of my soldiers, who was just this side of the railway track, said, "I can hear the Germans just the other side of the track. I think they're forming up to come across again. They're shouting 'Bloody Tommy' and things at us as well. I'd better go and have a look with you," I said, and I went over there. I remember with Sergeant Major and Sergeant Jenkins, that great chap who I'd promoted from Lance Corporal after the Battle of Saint-Jean-le-Blanc, and he was actually commanding a platoon as a sergeant. He was a very, very courageous man. He was with me. I had said to a tank troop, and I've mentioned this before, please put your tank on that level crossing in order to intimidate these Germans, and we'll come across. He said, I can't do that because it's dark, I might fall, etc. I said, well, stay where you are, second lieutenant, I didn't. And I put one of my, I got one of my own carriers up there, which is a noise of engines coming. And four or five of us followed this vehicle onto the level crossing. To our astonishment, in the ditch on the other side were about, well, a company of Germans, bayonets fixed, ready to come over. Sergeant Jenkins threw a phosphorus grenade at the first one who leveled a gun at us, hit him straight in the face, burnt him to death. Someone fired, one of my chaps, I think a second lieutenant, fired a burst of Sten gun down the... They thought we were attacking them. The whole company, it was only four or five of us. And this assault by us, and the general noise and confusion, made the Germans start to put their hands up, which they did. I said to the platoon commander there, round them up and take them back as prisoners. I can't see any officer. There must be a headquarters somewhere here. I said to the three or four who were with me, let's go forward and find the company headquarters of this lot. In an orchard about 30 yards back, behind all this fighting, I found a trench. In it were four or five men. They had Red Cross armbands on. One was an officer. They all put their hands up. And I turned to my second lieutenant behind me. I said, that's the officer. Get him. I want to talk to him. When I turned round again, this officer had put his hands down, pulled out his pistol and fired five shots into me. I was about two yards from him. He was firing up at me from the trench. Luckily, I had a thick leather coat on, and he had only a pistol. The bullets were enough to knock me backwards. They also hit my trigger finger and knocked the top off, and knocked my gun out of my hand, and I fell back. The young officer behind me came forward and filled the trench with lead. Kill them all, I hope. And that was that. I went back to my headquarters across the other side of the track.
What state were you in? Were you walking or being carried?
No, I was wood. I'd just been fell back by the thuds of these bullets, and I was bleeding. Mm-hmm. And I went back to Sergeant Major in my trench. Sergeant Major, being a very good man, once he'd been an officer's mess sergeant, had the brandy out. My batman had the pot tea ready. Someone bandaged up my finger and hand, and I was feeling much better. Half an hour had gone by. The prisoners had been taken back. Suddenly, coming down the track from the rail crossing, were two of my men leading a German who was covered from head to foot in blood. They said, this is the so-and-so what shot you, sir, over there. I said, I saw Mr. Sanderson fill him with lead. He is not dead, they said. We found him. Sergeant Major said to me, I'll take him over the hedge, sir, and finish him off. I said, that will not do, I'm afraid. No, you won't. What shall we do with him? I said, he can go back to our own doctor and see what's the matter with him. I said, well, I'm going back to the doctor anyway to have my hand looked at. Put him on the bonnet of my jeep and I'll drive him back. About a mile. I took him back. The doctor said, I've taken 7 bullets out of him. And he said, I've taken none out of you, but just the top of your fingers lost. I was very badly bruised in the side. I had said to the CO, I'd recounted about this man's surrender and what he'd done, and that he wasn't a Red Cross man at all. It was all fake. And that was that. What he did was to report this to Brigade, who reported it back to Army headquarters, who said this man, having surrendered and having done that as a Red Cross fake, is a war criminal. And that's the last time. That was that.
Did you ever know what his name was?
Yes, I did. Because more was to follow. A year later, I was sent for to go to Wuppertal. Why? They said, because we're going to try this man who shot you. He was a captain in Hauptmann. Oh, I don't know, Wilhelms or something. And a British court tried him. One brigadier, a lieutenant colonel, 2 majors. And I was there. And a German had a British major defending him, which was our way of showing the Germans that we were fair. This British major, I didn't realise at the time, was a trained barrister in civil life. The prosecuting officer had come over from London that morning, had 2 minutes with me about this matter, and so the trial started. It was hopeless from the beginning to end. The German side said, you've given this story. Please produce Sergeant Major, who was with you. I said, I can't, he's dead. Please produce Second Lieutenant Sanderson, who put the bullets into this man. I said, he's been killed. Where is Sergeant Jenkins, who you've also named? I said, he's dead. So you mean you're the only one left? I said, I am. It was, what time? 4 a.m.? Bad light. Don't you think, Major Robbins, you could have been mistaken that he had Red Cross armbands? Don't you think you could have been mistaken that he put his hands up when he really hadn't? I said, well, you've only got my word against his. Exactly. The court retired and found him not guilty.
Did they take long to come to their decision?
3 hours. The German came up to me afterwards and said, Herr Major, I wish to shake your hand. I said, look, I could have had you shot by my Sergeant Major after you came out. I have no wish to ever see you again. And I did not shake his hand or see him again. He'd been a prisoner of war for a year. I remember he was much fatter. He was in a prisoner of war camp in Cairo. In the battle, he was quite trim. After we'd looked after him for a year, he was well fed. A bad memory.
Were you absolutely furious?
Well, I was very angry that the whole thing had gone wrong. But, of course, I'd almost forgotten the thing because so much had happened since that incident.
Yes.
I mean, so much had happened to me since then.
Yes.
And that was that.
So we go back to where you've been injured. You've been looked at by the doc.
Yeah, I've been looked at by the doctor, and I stayed at duty. My hand was in a sling and so on, but there was no need for me to go back, and I didn't want to. And we then went into... After the withdrawal of the airborne, we were all moved off the island, which became a German area again. We couldn't get the Arnhem Bridge. They held it strongly. We had an Nijmegen Bridge, and we went from there towards Germany, Grosbeek, I remember the place, and the Reichswald Forest, where we dug in and opposed the Germans. I remember the battalion opposite us wasn't very good. We were no longer fighting the pick. When we captured any, they were all either elderly people or people with stomach problems, and the Germans had a battalion of stomach patients. People who, you know, had to have special diet to stand up. They were down a bit. Anyway, that was that, and it was before Hitler had gathered his army together for the great assault in the Ardennes.
Did you see much fighting in the Reichswald?
We saw a lot of patrolling. And they patrolled into us, and we patrolled into them. But we were at least a mile apart. It was rather open until we got to the woods, when they were at one end and we were the other. It wasn't very difficult then. And one day we were moved from there secretly right down south to Aachen and into the Siegfried Line. And later I saw a newspaper cutting, an English newspaper cutting, I don't know where they got it, but it said Major Robbins, first officer in the Siegfried Line, first officer into Germany. I didn't believe it. There must have been others. But I still got that cutting somewhere.
So, what was the Siegfried Line like?
The Siegfried Line was nothing as one would imagine. It was merely a name. And it was a series of defended positions in villages. It was no way like the renowned Maginot Line. Nothing like that at all. It was a description of a line of defence. They called it that, but we didn't make heavy weather of it. And when we went down there, we relieved an American division. And it was very interesting, because it was a very young division. It had just come into war. And we were told to put on American helmets so that if the Germans were watching, they could see Americans moving about and not British helmets. We didn't want them to know that the British had come down there. And this division, America, was to be pulled up. So we were sent forward, and I was sent forward to take over from an American company.
I'll stop you there. Colonel Robbins, end of reel 10.